What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Guys, welcome in to Hockey Royalty, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. As always, I am your host, Randy McMahon. If you're looking for articles and everything like that, go to HockeyRoyalty.com. But we got the live stuff right now with my friend here, Eric Landy of Teal Town USA. We'll be talking some Sharks Kings tonight. But first off, Landy, how you doing?
You know, can't complain, dude. Can't complain. You know, we're just getting into the meat or the dog days of the season. That's for sure with the NHL. I mean, we're kind of in that last little lap, and then unfortunately, you know, I know you're a big baseball fan too, so we're just kind of in the holding pattern until Manfred kind of gets off his behind and figures out what we're gonna do with this thing. So that being said, ready to talk some Sharks, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about the Kings win tonight over Boston for another 30-40 minutes, but we didn't bring you on here for that. So yeah, let's get it going, man. Let's get some hockey talk going, because we got a big series coming up, three games. But before we get into that, let's start with the teams in general, starting off with the centerpiece prospects. Obviously, the Sharks drafted their highest prospect in a long time in William Eklund, who started the season out with them. We're finally starting to see Byfield as far as the Kings are concerned. Let's start on your end. You know, what was your thoughts, obviously, with Eklund, the pick, how he played earlier in the season, and do you think they should have kept him on the roster?
Oh, boy. Well, we've gone, I mean, especially in the Sharks fandom, we've kind of gone back and forth on, you know, just kind of where we're at with him and his development, what was best for him. And I was of the camp that, you know, the NHL seemed like it was a little bit of a big game for him. And I think that it was going to take some time to adjust. Now, he didn't look completely out of character or out of sync here. But I think the best thing, if you want to keep him developing at a good rate, you want him to get some confidence and you want him to, you know, develop into that first line type of player, you know, sending him back to a junior organization or to the minor leagues, I think, was the prudent decision. I would have kept him in North America, to be honest, and I would have kept him in the AHL. And the reason why I'll tell you this is because the change from North American ice to European ice is a little different. And we have seen players that migrate to and from European ice have a little bit of a hard time adjusting to the North American size rink. So, you know, instead of it being, you know, 80 by 200, it's, I think it's a little bit wider. International ice is a little bit wider. So I think it's somewhere like 100 feet. And so you've got a lot more time, especially in the European ice, to make passes east west. And I think that that's what we were seeing with Eklund, where he wanted to be creative, but because there wasn't as much ice to play with, he had less time to kind of react and to kind of gauge where players were going to be at. So I think, again, it's just going to be an adjustment thing. But he did get injured, I think it was two nights ago for Djurgården. And, you know, we've kind of been, you know, crossing our fingers that it's not a long-term thing. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him back on the big club next year. I think, you know, I don't think he's going to spend any time with the Barracuda. I think he's just going to be one of those kind of players that's going to go directly from his junior team or his, you know, foreign team directly to the Sharks, because I think he's that good of a prospect. But we've also got some other guys too. You know, we've lamented a long time at the lack of depth for the Sharks prospect pool, but they've done a really good job restocking the cupboard. And you know, some other guys that I've got kind of highlighted, Brandon Coe, Tristan Robbins, Danielle Gushkin. And those are the three big guys that I have kind of, you know, circled, highlighted, for me. You know, some guys on the NCAA, I think that there's Thomas Bortolo, who we're all really excited to see. Alex Young and Spirit Spinoff is also, you know, some guys that we're also tracking as well. So we've got some really, really cool, interesting prospects coming through. The whole organization, I think, shifted from, it was like 25. It was like, I think it was Corey Promin's prospect rankings had him at like 24, 25. And I think an hour in like the 14, 15 range. So yeah, we made some really good strides.
Well, yeah, let's bring it back. I think you made an interesting point with Eklund before you rambled off some guys there. And it's the same thing with Byfield, is that I thought COVID helped him stay, being able to stay in the AHL last year really helped his development, because NHL or OHL is a vastly different league. And for the second overall pick, you know, playing a year in Canada again might not have done him good, but playing with adults in the United States could have really helped him out for different reasons than Eklund, as you mentioned. But, you know, having, you know, AHL is widely known as the second best league in hockey by most people. And I think you're probably right. Eklund maybe would have benefited more from staying in the United States. I know he was going to play, or he was on the World Junior team as well, which would have been some nice competition. But you know, having that growth in different aspects. And I think you look at when I talked to Scott Wheeler on the podcast, he said the overall depth from the first to fourth line in the NHL is a lot deeper now than it, say, was 10 years ago, where when you were a top five pick, you were able to burst onto the scene a lot quicker because the depth wasn't as big. Now you're getting fourth liners who are perennial scorers and juniors that, you know, there's just so much depth. That's why you're seeing Lafreniere take a little bit longer. That's why you're seeing Jack Hughes take a little bit longer. And so there's nothing wrong with a little bit of marinating, whether it be in Sweden or in North America.
Well, I think we can go and look back towards the Stanley Cup winners, the recent Stanley Cup winners, right? We look at Tampa Bay and we look at how that organization takes a long time to maturate prospects. I mean, their prospects don't come hot off the scene. They take a long time, you know, with the Admirals, with the Norfolk Admirals, right? And really getting, you know, their craft honed. You know, the same thing when LA had its run of Stanley Cups. You know, they had a bunch of pieces buried, you know, in the AHL that were just, you know, called up, and it's not only organization depth on your big club, but it's organization depth throughout, you know, 0 through 50 roster spots. And I think, like you had said, the caliber of player that are coming out are just so much more skilled. They're so much more developed. And I think the other thing too that we're starting to see is they last a long time. Players are consistently lasting into their late 30s, and it's a trend that we are just now starting to really appreciate in the NHL, that you know, the players have really done a good job of taking care of themselves and the longevity of this era.
Yeah, sports science has come a long way for sure.
Yeah, is incredible. So like you said, the depth is just incredible, and it's hard to crack those lineups.
Let's swing it over to the rivalry itself. Now, obviously, it's a viewpoint there, but I think it's mutual hatred is a good term to call it, or respect, however you want to use it. The long time, you know, Sharks were, I mean, they were relevant, and they're starting to maybe teeter off that. A lot of their big stars are getting up there in age, as well as with us, you know, Brownie being over 35, Kopitar and Doughty into their 30s. Same thing with Quick. So the rivalry's been lasted a long time, but just kind of maybe talk about what your thought is on the rivalry, maybe some highs and lows, and then, you know, how it's kind of matured into like the last couple years for you.
Yeah. Least. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, LA is going to always be the rival. You know, there might be other teams that come in and out, but I think for me, I almost look at it as a geographical, and I see it almost on the, you know, the Giants, Dodgers, or the Niners, Rams type of rivalry, where, you know, it's just LA and we don't like Los Angeles as a Bay Area team. So, you know, I think to me, it's inherently going to always have that built-in rivalry. But as you said, I mean, the team has gone through some changes, and I think each team has started to kind of go into their own direction, right? The San Jose Sharks are kind of languishing right now, whereas the Kings, I think, are on the ascent. And I think that they're just kind of in different, you know, they're in different career, or, I mean, different arcs in where they're at in the organization goes. And so I think when each team is kind of going their different ways, you know, one team is relevant and one team isn't, I think you're going to start to see the fireworks dwindle a little bit. But I tell you, from a fan perspective, you know, I think that the rivalry is alive and well. And I think, you know, you'd pull most Sharks fans that either tell you the Kings or the Knights are our biggest rival. And for me, it's going to be the Kings because, again, that geographic thing trumps all. But, you know,
it's so crazy how the Knights became rivalries for everybody overnight.
Yeah.
I think it's just like they got into the league. They got those easy, quote unquote, rules for them to take players from everybody. They were allowed to make all these. They were pretty aggressive in their backyard deals, but just instantly a good team, I think, kind of pissed a lot of people off, if I don't say so myself.
Well, I mean, you know, when the Sharks came in, we had a couple of years of languishing at the bottom. When the Kings came in, they were historically bad, you know, in 67, right? When they were expansion. So I think for most, you know, most franchises that are expansion franchises, there's this unique type of pain that you feel in the first couple of years that most expansion franchises have to go through. And it seems like Vegas kind of bypassed that. And I think that that's kind of what made a lot of fans kind of annoyed, because it's like, okay, here these people are, you know, they think that they're the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? And, you know, they just got their team and they're going to the Stanley Cup run and, you know, all this other stuff. So, you know, I think that there was a lot of externals that fed into why people hated the Knights. But, you know, again, I go back to the early 2010s, you know, the 2012, 2013, 2014 seasons, where you just had the Sharks and the Kings. It seemed like every year it was, okay, where are we going to face the Kings? Are we going to face it in the quarterfinals? Are we going to face it in the semis? You know, it was just like those two teams were on a crash course for each other. You know, and really the didn't really matter where they ended up in the regular season. It just mattered where they were going to be at positionally in the playoffs, who was going to have that home ice advantage. And in the end, I mean, we've seen both of the teams. I think it's what, 3-2 in favor of series wins. And I think LA's got the slight edge with 3 series wins over us with 2 series wins, but it's been a very uniquely matched rivalry. It's been for either team, you hate the players that are against you. You know, you look at somebody like Doughty and you want to punch him in the face, or Kopi, and, you know, he's just like, ah, oh, damn, that big Slovenian. He's just too damn good and big and stupid face or whatever. And then, of course, if you're a Kings fan, you'll be like, ah, oh, you know, Timo, he's such a dickhead, or, you know, Kane or whatever.
You obviously didn't like Brownie hitting you in the boards for decades and then scoring some pucks as well. I mean, that guy can throw some bones.
Or the accidental on purpose kneeing of a said young forward at the beginning of his career. But I digress. No, I mean, but again, it's been a good rivalry, and I think that each of the teams have been you know, very evenly matched, and I think that that's what makes a good rivalry. And it's the same thing I've said with Giants Dodgers, is both of the teams have to be good for the rivalry to be good, for us to get into it as fans and to really get that level of going to the Staples Center and hearing the roof rattle, or going to the Shark Tank and hearing all the applause off the metal roof and echoing down into the stadium. I mean, both venues have had iconic moments with the other team in the venue. I mean, we had the jumbo slide at the Staples Center, or we had the reverse sweep completed at SAP Center. You know, it's just, there has just been so much historical and so much just so evenly matched the series.
And at that pinnacle too, you had the California Hockey. I mean, you had the Ducks there, was relevant too with Getzlaf. So California Hockey was at its pinnacle at that point. And I just think the rivalry was been fantastic. There's great players on both sides. You look at, there's been some great times. And like every time that dot comes up on the schedule on my phone, you got to circle it. You have to, because you know, even when the teams aren't very good, you still circle it. But when they're at their peak, it's usually a bloodbath. The hitting gets turned up, the fan interaction gets turned up. You know, it's me, especially being from Northern California. You know, I hear it all the time. Why aren't you a Sharks fan? Sharks fan, all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I look better in black than I do in teal. But yeah, it's just, it's phenomenal. And I really like the whole rivalry. I think as it's going into this future, we're going to see something a little bit different and similar to how when the Kings had that drop off and now they're coming back up. You know, I think that the Sharks are going about to do that and maybe started their own little rebuild or retool. And maybe we'll see in 5 years where they're at as far as are they going to be on like about ready to contend for the playoffs again with a whole new crop going against, you know, the number one prospect pool in hockey right now. Like where are they going to be at in their development? How is that those new young guys, the new core pieces for both rosters going to carry that rivalry into the future?
Well, I mean, I think going back towards it, it just takes one hit. Right. It just takes one monster hit. It just takes one blown call, just takes one stupid check into the boards to reignite the rivalry, because I think it's brewing. You know, it's something that's always simmered. These organizations have not liked each other in general for these, you know, amounts of years. Yeah, we've had a couple trades here and there. I think it was just a couple of years ago that Doug Wilson completed a trade with every franchise in the NHL, and the Kings were last on that list for a reason. You know, so again, I think that the whole temperature has been dialed down right now, but it just takes one hit. It just takes one stupid, stupid run at a goaltender or, you know,
and they're playing three games in five games. So yeah. I think I have a feeling we might see at the third game, we might see all the heat from the previous games getting dumped in. And so it's going to be definitely interesting. Let's move it along to the season here and the season so far. Obviously, both teams weren't favored to really do much this year. They were both kind of fringe playoff teams. A lot of Kings fans thought they might make that push for the wild card. A lot of Sharks fans said, hey, maybe if they can get one more run from their core and you get some help from the young players like Dahlin and Eklund, that they might be able to make a push as well. And I'll just start it off from the Kings standpoint. I mean, Rob Blake did a fantastic job this offseason bringing in Phil Deneau, Victor Arvidsson, Edler, and then some of the rookies like Jersey and Kaliev. I mean, he pretty much brought in 50 goals so far this season that weren't there last year. And if you're looking at that team now is third in per game shots on goal and first on not allowing shots on goal. So when you have that stark contrast, you know, you win a lot of games by putting pressure. Having Kopitar and Phil Deneau up the center, two Selke, finalist or slash Selke winner, as your 1-2. You have Lizotte and Lemieux who are grinders on the fourth line. It just seems like this team is a lot more complete, and that's why we see them in the second seed at this point going into the trade deadline. Now, how did you view the Shark season, you know, considering we both kind of started in the offseason roughly – in the same part in the standings in most people's rankings?
Well, I think for the Kings, you've had this renewed effort in the last couple of years by Rob Blake to restock the cupboard and to really get good around his veteran guys. I mean, they said that they weren't going to go prescribe for a long rebuild, right? Because you still had Doughty, you still had Kopitar, you still had good years out of them.
Yeah, the core said they wanted to win there. Yeah.
Exactly. So, it's been a good little 3-year turnaround where they've really committed to focusing on restocking the cupboards, getting those fresh kind of players in and then rebuilding with size. And I think Rob Blake has done a real great job of picking up assets that have depreciated or assets that have kind of flown under the radar a little bit and has added a lot of offense to his team. And like you had said, it's reflected in the standings. And I think right now, for me, the Kings are maybe just slightly ahead of schedule. I'd say I would have had them flirting with the wild card, really pushing hard for wild card number 2 or wild card number 1. But as a second seed right now, they're going really well. They have a points advantage over Vegas, even if Vegas catches up with games played. So you like where Los Angeles is insofar as the season and how they've banked their points. On the Sharks' hand,
I believe if they go 500 for the rest of the season, the Kings will end up with like 94 or 95 points, which should be enough to get them in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I think we've targeted 91 points is kind of where the wild card, I think, is going to end up. So, you know, if you can bank, you know, anything past 90, I think you're going to be really in really good shape to, you know, to get one of those spots. On the Sharks end of the things, you know, I went in cautiously optimistic. I said, you know, if they can keep their core healthy, I felt, you know, that they had pieces to make some noise. But again, I still felt that the team was at least one impact forward away with Evander Kane on the roster. Of course, without Evander Kane on the roster, you're now taking, you know, another impact player out. So realistically, this team is at least one second line away from really making any kind of noise at this point. I think the team's depth kind of speaks for itself. You look at their shot totals in the last five games and they've been putrid. You know, not last game, but the game before when they played against the Predators, they lost 8-0. Scoring has been an issue. Now we've got James Reimer on the injured reserve as well. So, I mean, this team is really not going anywhere at this point. And I think we're kind of now salvaging moral victories and kind of setting ourselves up for what's going to happen next season. Who's going to pay for a contract, play for a contract, who's getting a new contract, who's getting shipped out. And I think a lot of those questions are going to be answered and asked in this next little period going up to the trade deadline.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot from the Kings as far as you look at, they have, I believe, 8 guys, you know, over 25 points, where the Sharks have 6 and 4 guys that are just really carrying the team, which is the veterans. And so, like you said, depth is really where it's at. And if those guys don't show up, it's hard to win games and all that kind of stuff. So,
not to mention the utilization factor, right? So you're, like you had said, right, the bulk of the offense is coming from those 4 or 5 players, but in order to get that offensive productivity out of those players, they've actually had to play increased loads. So not only do you have the fact that you're reliant upon these players to output, but you're also running them into the ground. So now we're starting to see a player like Hurdle, who was on, I think, a 60-70 point pace, now I think is coming back down to earth to around maybe 50. And I think a lot of that has to do with being overplayed. He plays both power play, penalty kill, and the most amount of ice 5-on-5. And this is a kid who has generally played second line center for most of his career. So this is definitely an uptick in time on ice for him. And I'm concerned about the utilization. So like you had said, depth is not there. That means you're forced to rely upon your superstars that much more, or your star players that much more. And it's kind of that self perpetuating issue of keeping your guys fresh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Kings have just been lucky. I mean, you get Durzi come up with the Walker injury. He's been playing fantastic. You're seeing that fourth line, Lemieux and Lazat and Kaliev constantly. And
Lazat has been a great pickup. I thought that he's just added so much to that fourth line. A guy who really is just an agitator, just that nastiness factor, you know, and again, a grinder, and just another one of those under the radar pickups from
Rob Blake.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just facts, because the Kings last year maybe had one line a game that was functional or partly exactly functional. And we're seeing them roll 4 lines almost every single game, like waves and waves of Warriors crashing upon the shore. So it's crazy what they're doing this year, and people are picking them up. Obviously, Kempe on almost the 35 goal pace was unexpected by most people, but you're getting the goal scoring from VA. Deneau is probably one of the best two-way center, if not the best two-way center in the league in most analytics. And we're just getting a lot of things to go right, which when you stock the covers that much and you make some good moves, it can turn like a light switch. So
Arvidsson has seemingly turned around his career. I mean, right. I mean, yeah, he's right now he's at 38 points, but I think, you know, he'll end up with at least 50 points on the season. And this is a cat who we kind of, we thought that there was the talent there, but it had been a while since he had kind of flashed the numbers that we thought, you know, he could. So it's good to see. Well, as a Sharks fan, it's not good to see, but as a Kings fan, it's definitely really awesome to see the coaching staff maximizing the return on the players that they've got right now and getting some surprise contributions.
Yeah, Kings are holding their breath. He got injured, not this game, but the previous game. So we'll see how long he's out. The Kings actually suffered some, like the last three games, they've each game they've suffered an injury. So to Lemieux, who's been that grindy, he's the guy that fights everybody. You got Arvidsson, who just came off a hat trick to win it, and then he got injured. And this and today, Mikey Anderson, our left D1, out in the first with the hit from the rat, Marchand, in the board. So Kings rolling right now, and they're pretty deep, but lose some key players there. Before we go on to the next topic here, we're going to get a word from our sponsor, DraftKings. Hoops fans, the latest offer from DraftKings Sportsbook as an official sports betting partner of the NBA is too good to pass up. I'm talking between the legs, 360 windmill good. New customers can bet just $1 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state, you can still take your shot at a big payday. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Basketball Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes on their first deposit. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. That's THPN. Bet just $1 on any NBA team and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21 years of age, minimum age, and in location requirements based on jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for a full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gaming resources. Void where prohibited. Minimum $5 deposit. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text 467-369. Thank you, DraftKings. All right, we're moving on to the trade deadline. It's a little late this year. It's kind of weird. It's like trade deadline, like a couple weeks, and then playoffs. So, but obviously, teams in two different situations. Kings are probably going to be buyers or staying pat. But let's flip it over. Let's start with the Sharks. You know, see what they're going to do. Obviously, in the beginning of the season, you guys have a lot of those questions on what they're going to push. Are they going to sell? The biggest issue is a lot of the albatross contracts that you have on the blue line. What do you see them doing this year? Who do you think is the most movable pieces and maybe what you guys can get in return?
Well, I think the biggest question right now in Sharks land has got to be centered around number 48, right? I mean, it's got to be about what Hurdle's going to do insofar as, is he going to resign in San Jose or is he going to want to chase his cup dream somewhere else? Last that I heard, and this was from today from Elliot Friedman, the Sharks have made a really, really big push to keep him. Now, the Sharks have been very, very tight-lipped on any kind of contract talks with Hurdle. The last thing that we had heard from Hurdle's camp was they had some really positive conversations with the Sharks. But that's about it. The Sharks themselves haven't really said much. So Elliot did a little bit of digging, and it seems that the team is actually really, really keen on keeping him, and that they haven't even entertained ideas for trades yet because they are so focused on the re-sign at this point. So
he's 28. So if they did do a little mini rebuild, 3 to 5 years, you're looking at in his, he could be that, you know, kind of where
31, 32,
yeah, 32, kind of where, you know, Kopi is kind of right now, that kind of age in the rebuild and try to be there to lead the team, you know, for that next little wave in their franchise.
Yeah. And I think that that is kind of the idea is to kind of build around him. But of course, it's going to all be dependent upon if he's going to want to stay. And if he decides, you know, hey, look, you know, we've had a good run here in San Jose, but, you know, we just can't do it here, you know, and I'd like to go somewhere else. Then, you know, I think we'll probably start to hear that maybe a week before the deadline. I think we're, what, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks almost from the deadline. So I think if we don't start to hear something like a week out, then I would start to say, you know, maybe it's going to be more of a trade type of deal where you'll try to extract, it's going to be a low first round pick, right? Whoever is a contender that's going to want to get him is going to try and trade their first round pick. Of course, it's going to be low because they're going to be a playoff contender. So, you know, it's going to be something like that. And maybe a B+ prospect, you know, A- kind of prospect. So a pick and a player is kind of what I think, you know, you'd ask for a player like Hurdle. You know, there's
him and Forsberg seem like the biggest UFAs available on as far as forwards go. And they're in the same position. I think Elliot Friedman said the same thing about Nashville and the saying that, you know, they're kind of waiting to see where they're at. I mean, they're in more of a playoff condition than you are. You got a little different situation. They would like to re-sign him, but they don't want to see him go for nothing. And so they're kind of in that limbo aspect, like you said, 2 weeks until the deadline.
Now, the thing with Nashville, though, is they do also have Ryan Johansson, right? So they have their number one center, or him and Duchene, right? So they have, you know, a 1-2 center. So it's not as imperative for them to re-sign their player, because you look at the depth chart in San Jose, it's Logan and Hurdle. That's your one and your two. I mean, you know what I mean? So you've got to have somebody that's going to play that spot if you're going to ship him out. And I just don't know who that is going to be for the Sharks. I mean, you can put a random no-namer, yes, but you know, you have to also think about how much is it going to cost me to recoup a number 1B, 2A type center. Those are still growing on trees, right? So it's all about one, I think where he wants to go, two, the length of the contract that the player wants to sign, and three, just the fit, you know, on the team for where the player is going to be. You know, a team like San Jose, where a center is needed at a premium, that's definitely a need. But if you go and you shop him to a team, let's say like New York, you know, yeah, they could use him as a third line center, and that would be a hell of a third line center. But I mean, he could be an impact player, you know, higher up in your lineup. So Hurdle's kind of an interesting player because he can play anywhere up and down the lineup. He can play on the wing. He can play at center. And again, those kind of players are very hard to come by. So it would not surprise me to see the Sharks do re-sign him. But again, I think it'll be up to what Hurdle wants to do in the end.
Yeah, it's going to be something interesting, you know, what they say they can get from him. His cap hit, you know, not too bad, 5-6, I'm sure. If San Jose ate some of that, they could probably get a better package in return. You know, and they might be able to get a first round pick and an A-plus prospect.
I mean, it's an expiring contract, so there's not an extra year you have to worry about. So, you know, it's going to be prorated for when you trade him. So it'll be about
I'm not talking about the money. I'm talking about you have to fit under the cap. You know,
what I'm saying is the cap hit is also prorated as well. So yeah, they don't get the full cap hit at trade deadline, because that cap hit is based upon 1 year's worth of salary. So you'll have a prorated cap hit. So it'll be, I think it's roughly 2/3 of what the cap hit is now. So let's say it costs 5.8. I think his salary is 5.7, 5.8. And I think the actual cap hit you would take on as a team, I think, would be somewhere in the fours. I think it's like 4 million flat or something at the deadline. That's what it's going to cost you in cap space. So I think it's an asset that's definitely valuable from a price perspective. I think it's also, again, it's a expiring contract, so you don't have to worry about the extra year. It's also a player that's only 28 years old, so it's not like we're talking about a guy here who's on his last deal, or you know, a guy who's, you know, trying to play fourth line minutes or whatever. No, this is a high caliber first line, second line type of player. A center is his natural position, but again, can be a winger, impact player, 200 foot player.
What do you think about Barbanov? I mean, he's a UFA, 27, probably won't be around for the rebuild. He's having a decent year and only a cap hit of a mil. Easy to fit him on any team that's contending. And with his season, you could probably get a decent return in the draft.
We talked a little bit about him being a guy that you could maybe try and get like a third round pick out of, maybe a fourth round pick. But again, I mean, this is a guy who was on waivers last year, a guy that a lot of teams have had the opportunity to kind of nab, and it didn't seem like there was very much interest. I don't know what the market's going to be like for him. It might be still kind of tepid. That being said, I think he's also likes the fit here in San Jose. So again, if you could bring him in at a relatively low contract, you're going to need bodies to play. And that's going to be the thing as well. So for me, I think most important and the thing that I would try to do, try and offload in this trade deadline, somebody try and take maybe a Brent Burns or a Radim Šimek, somebody with a little bit of time on their, you know, on their salary cap and a little bit of a bigger piece, because, you know, I think we've kind of all seen this writing on the wall. The team is a lot farther than the organization is leading the fans to believe.
Yeah.
I think it's farther away than where it is. I think a lot of people see it's time for the rebuild. And I think getting the most value you can out of a Burns, out of a Šimek, hell, even a Logan Couture. I mean, I would not be, you know, I wouldn't put it past the team to try and extract value that way. But if it were me, I would really focus on trying to get rid of one of the big contracts, and try to see if you can take half of the salary and keep it and retain it, and see if somebody would take a flyer on a Brent Burns or somebody needing a spare defenseman or what have you. But that's kind of where I look at it on the off season and with the off season and with the trade deadline. I think the trade deadline, it's all about maximizing expiring contracts and getting pieces out and really looking at where the market is and looking at what GMs need at this time of year, right? I mean, defensemen are always needed. It seems like face-off guys are always needed.
The Kings fans were going through that last year, or a couple of years ago. We know how it is to sell everybody away. And sometimes you just need to sell everybody. You know, like you just need to get whatever you can get, whether Barbanov is a third or fourth rounder. You know, if he wants to come back and sign in the offseason, that's fine. But the Sharks need to, you know, restock the cupboard and do whatever they can. It wasn't fun seeing Jack Campbell go, or Muzzin or Clifford or any of these guys, you know, that were, you know, most of them cup holders and Toffoli and that kind of stuff. But those prospects helped, you know, stock our cupboard. They're going to be around, and either they're going to be used for trade pieces like past prospects were for Mike Richards and Jeff Carter. Well, you know, or they're going to be on the Kings for a while. And I think the Sharks need to do that. And it's going to be hard. I mean, the Kings never had to deal with any of those contracts as big as what you guys have. Our biggest contracts they wanted to keep in Kopitar and Doughty. And I think, you know, they were a little bit younger at the time that they got their money. So definitely not fun, you know, seeing what you're going to get for these guys and realizing that maybe that era is coming to an end. Kings fans had to go through that. And we're a lot happier this year. We're talking about trade deadlines for the Kings. Will, or how much is it going to get Jacob Chychrun is the big thing around the Kings Twitter sphere. You know, will they go for Forsberg at the deadline and make a push? Are they a cup contender? Money Pucks has us anywhere between 5-7% to win the Stanley Cup. So, you know, we're on that fringe cup team. A lot of Kings fans don't think we are. I think with the Corsi infused team that we are and that shot volume team, if we get a couple more people to bury it in and our special teams can creep a little bit, we have a punter, we have a puncher's chance at competing with the juggernaut teams that are in the league. But it's nice to be a part of the buyer. I think ultimately the way Rob Blake has approached this this rebuild or whatever, he's been pretty conservative for the most part. Really hasn't traded many picks away outside of the Arvidsson. You know, has just signed a lot of free agents there. And so I don't know if he's going to make that big splash at the deadline. He may wait. Arizona doesn't need to trade Chychrun right now. They can wait to the offseason when more suitors are available to get the package that they want. You know, will Forsberg be available?
I think if it's a hockey move, like you guys trade, you know, like a second rounder and a B type prospect for Chychrun or you know, something that is of equal value, you know, similar.
Well,
equal
Chychrun's, value. They're asking for, the Eichel package right now. They're asking for, he led the league in goals last year for defensemen, but you're looking at either Turcotte or Vilardi, a first round pick and another prospect or player or two, depending on who those prospects and players are.
See, and to me that, you don't want to touch any of those kids. I mean, Turcotte is not a guy that you want to get rid of, and the same with the other. And I don't see Rob Blake mortgaging the future just for, you know, a quick roll of the dice on this particular.
Chychrun's got 4 years of service at $4 million though, so he's a cheap fringe elite defenseman for with term.
man, let me take a look.
So yeah, those are one of the guys. You know, with the injuries, how long VA and all those guys out? But I think we got forwards in the AHL to make call ups. You know, Velarde's down there, and a bunch of other guys, Kupari, who's already played. And so, like, you could bring up forwards to plug and play there, and don't really need to make a splash, unless you're getting Forsberg, who like will say he's going to resign, and you don't have to risk like it being a one and done type thing. But I don't know. Can the Kings afford what is rumored to be his salary that he wants is $9.5 million in the offseason? I'm not sure. So we'll see how that works out. But what they might just stand pat because Edler's supposed to be coming back off an injury. And towards the beginning of April. So, you know, he was doing well with us. The team's playing well right now. We're in second place. He might just stand pat and say, hey, you know, we're not a true contender right now. Let's wait another year before we make those moves, or let's make those moves in the offseason.
The other thing, too, is I'm just looking at the cap positioning for the LA Kings. And, you know, you've still got Drew Doughty locked up till the 26-27 season, right? So even if you do get Jake Chychrun, his deal is going to expire 25-26. You're going to have to pay that. You're going to have to pay him and Drew Doughty at the same time. And that's going to be, not that it's that the cap isn't going to rise and stuff, but I think it's going to be a lot of cap dedicated to a few defensemen. So Jacob Chychrun is going to be the piece that's going to be sought after at the trade deadline. And I think he's going to, you know, well worth it. I don't think that the Kings are in the arc to be spending that kind of capital to get that kind of a player. I think that you're still, like you had said, I think this is your year where you're kind of playing with the house money. I think next year is really when the expectations start to come back for the Kings. Like, hey, okay, you know, now it's going to be quarterfinals, or now it's going to be semis, or, you know, now let's take a, you know, this seems like a Western Conference title team. To me, this team right now still seems like a team that is got to learn its playoff. It's got to learn its playoff mojo again. It's got to, you know, it's got to get back on the playoffs. It's got to see where the team and, you know, how it's going to this version of the team is going to move forward.
But Chychrun's got to do that, too. He's never been in the playoffs with Arizona. And Longoff comes in here with this. Chychrun is worth the trade at his cost in both value and salary. He slots perfectly. You can also trade 7 along with it, which is Bjornfoot. We need a strong second pair lefty. We can swap Mata and Edler out later. I tend to agree. I mean, I think it's a move that not only builds this year, but next year. Makes the team better this year and next year. I'm not a fan of any expiring contracts for the trade because we're not one piece away from winning the cup. But right. Chychrun helps us get better this year and is a pinnacle piece there. Plus, when his contract is up, Kopitar will no longer be making $11 million. Brown will be off the roster, his $5.6 million. Quick will his $5 million be off the roster.
And the FNUF dead money will come off too. So, yeah. I mean,
they could probably make it work. Yeah,
they could make it work, and I think for me at least, I don't see that's where this team is at. Insofar as I don't know, I still feel like
we brought you on to get some outside perspective, my man. I like it. Let's get into the game time because we all want to watch some actual hockey. Which we can't do right now, but maybe by the time you're listening to this during the week, you get you pumped up for the series coming up on Thursday for game one. With the way the teams are set up now and how they're playing, how do you kind of see this 3-game series going out? What are the Sharks going to have to do to win against the Kings in your eyes?
Well, I think right now it's a very delicate time in Sharks land. I think it wouldn't be surprised to see the Sharks lose 2-3 out of the games that are coming up, and not pull off a win against the Kings because the team is just that desperate and that kind of pathetic, lethargic looking right now. That being said, it will probably end up being 3-2 type games. It's going to be whoever's goaltender is going to, you know, make the last save. Because these teams, I mean, they don't normally go run and gun on each other. You know, they're normally tight checking, normally very heavy hockey, and normally low scoring. And again, I think for me, I'm preparing myself for at least a couple of losses against the Kings going into this three-game set.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're looking... they always play each other tough. So they're going to play each other tough. It is always how it is. The Sharks, no matter how good or bad they are, they seem to put points up on LA. I think the way they're playing now, we had a couple bad losses, one to the Bruins and then to Dallas, and then they rambled off some great wins. As recording that tonight, we just watched them beat Boston, come back and tie it in the last 30 seconds and win in overtime with a goal by Athanasiou. So there's been some late game heroics from Victor Arvidsson, Athanasiou. Different characters are stepping up. I think this is the deepest the Kings have been in the last few years for sure, when facing the Sharks. And so, the goal.
It's not a good time. It's not a good time for the Sharks depth wise, right? There's a lot of injuries depth wise for the team. We will be getting Erik Karlsson back, but the forward wise, I mean, forwards, you guys just wipe the floor insofar as the depth goes. So, that's kind of why I'm not very optimistic for our chances, because the Kings are just that deep right now. I mean, they're playing some really good hockey. They had a couple of missteps, yes, but I think that this is a team also, too, that's led by Doughty and Kopitar. And this is a team that knows how to win, you know, knows how to weather the ebbs and flows of a season. So that being said, I think the Kings, you know, I think it'll probably be the Kings will probably win a couple. One of the three games will go to overtime. I predict it probably through the next three games that we'll play each other will probably be.
I'm going to say 4 or 5 points for the Kings in the three games is what I think we get.
Yeah, I think if you don't get 4 points, it's going to be a missed opportunity for the Kings.
Yeah, I think they're playing Florida and another playoff team, Colorado, in between a couple of the games with you guys. So definitely got to win against the Sharks in order to make those other games worth it. So it's going to be tough. I mean, the Sharks always play us tough. I think they're going to have to shut down. Like we talked about, you guys have four guys that are really the pinnacle of your offense. If we can shut them down, the Kings are throwing four lines at you all the time. How long are these injuries going to affect us, right? So they just happened. We played you guys on Thursday. Arvidsson, Lemieux, and Mikey Anderson are three top guys on our team. Who fills that role? How well does that work out? Are we going to maybe see a call up like Elias Anderson, who just come off his injury stint? Is it going to be Vilardi that gets a shot, depending on how long
Arvidsson is out? I'd like to see Vilardi.
Especially since, Arvidsson's a power play type guy. Maybe bring up Vilardi to get his chance there. So Kings fans are holding their breath and seeing how long the injuries are going to be. And I think that'll dictate the moves from the roster, but it's always going to be nice. And so, you know, it's good. It's a fun games. It's entertaining games. If you're going to the games, you know, you're having fun, talking back and forth with the opposing fans, you know, razzing them, you know, busting some jaws and stuff, not literally, but metaphorically. And it's always going to be a good time here. Let's go into future predictions and wrap this thing up here. For King, I'll go second in the future predictions. What do you think? How does the season end for the Sharks? Do they make a run and maybe push for a wild card? Do you think it's over with? They sell off. How many pieces are they going to sell off? What do you think ultimately it's going to go?
I think ultimately what's going to happen is the team is going to be able to re-sign Hurdle. I think they'll keep Hurdle. I think maybe one or two players might get treated, maybe like a Matt Nieto or Andrew Cogliano, you know, those kind of secondary or tertiary pieces to a contending team. I could see a couple of them moved at the deadline. I think this team is probably going to end up sixth in the Pacific Division at the end of the season. I think it's going to be better than the Kraken, and I don't know. We'll have to see if they're any better than Vancouver, because at this point Vancouver I think is still better than them. So I could still see the Sharks being, like I said, sixth in the division, seventh in the division. So,
which at that point during the playoffs, you'd be turning your head towards the draft and doing some scouting there for you guys, which has been fun for the Kings fans, getting the top prospects, having them, you know, the Brant Clarks, the Byfields of the world. Obviously it was fun with you guys getting Eklund last year. Kings are on the opposite end. I think they're hot right now. And it depends, this is, you know, being recorded before any of the injury updates for all those three players come out. But assuming they're not out very long, we'll just say that, you know, they're out for a week. I think the Kings have a pretty easy schedule going forward for the most part. And I think they're going to be able to capitalize. I think, like I said before, if they do over 500, if they do around 500 for the rest of the season, they'll be roughly at 90 to 94 points, depending on some overtime situations there, which should be enough to get us in the playoffs. I think they make maybe a minor move, or we stand pat. But either way, I think we're going to be second in the division when it comes to the playoffs. Either playing, probably playing Vegas in the first round with a chance to get some revenge from that sweep a couple years back with a completely different team. But that Vegas team is kind of weird. I know they're not doing too hot after Eichel's come there, but they got a lot of people on long-term IR. And as we know from past Lightning teams, they can get all those players back without any consequence. And so they're going to have a quite loaded roster there. Eichel's going to be healthier. So it'll be completely different than any Vegas team that we've seen so far in the regular season. So it should be very interesting how the season shapes up. I would like to, you know, as a Kings fan, I would like a chicken trade. Just the first time being buyers again, you know, the feeling that I felt having Carter and Mike Richards brought in at the deadline, it would be the same kind of feeling that Chikrin would bring for this team, you know, hope that maybe they can win a series or two series. I think they're good enough to beat any team in the Western Conference in a series, maybe outside of Colorado. I wouldn't say high hopes, but definitely in, I think they could beat Vegas. I think they can beat Edmonton. I think they could beat the Ducks if they come in. I think that they could beat Calgary.
Calgary is the one where I would say that's probably between them and Colorado are the two biggest obstacles, I think, for the LA Kings at this point, in my opinion. I think that Calgary is going to end up being one of those teams that's going to be a hard out in the playoffs. So at the end of the day, they might be the ones, you know, a certain Daryl Sutter might be the one to, you know, kick the Kings out of the playoffs, so to speak.
Well, it should be a swift jab to the giblets, if you do say so myself, especially with Toffoli on that team, and they have some other Kings on that roster. So it'd be kind of a weird little homecoming there. So, well, Landy, it's been a pleasure, man. It's been a long time since we've talked hockey. Let people know what you got going on in your job with the Sharks there in Teal Town, USA. Where can they find you?
Yeah. You know, you can use my first name. That's E-R-I-K. Last name Landy, L-A-N-D-I, on, you know, any of the social media outlets. I'm there. And as far as what I'm doing these days, I am doing stuff over at Teal Town, USA. You can check us out after every Sharks game. We do a post-game video podcast. And so you guys can check this out on YouTube. You can also get the rewinds on all of the SoundCatcher services out there. So whether it be Spotify or whether it be Google Play Store or the Apple iTunes podcast store, whatever, we're there. So go and check us out. And as far as that goes, that's pretty much all the projects that I've got going on at the moment. And yeah, just kind of waiting for baseball, dude.
Well, as always, you can find us at hockeyroyalty.com. We're doing articles every day, articles coming out pre and post game for both the Rain and the Kings. Twitter handles at hockey_royalty. You're obviously, if you're watching this, you're at our YouTube, but find us out on YouTube, like and subscribe. Thank you again for our sponsor at DraftKings, promo code THPN. And as always, go Kings, go.